Well, thank you, everybody. I'm going to really switch very much from the two earlier presentations, which have sort of focused very much upon global strategies and the overall costs of dementia care, to think very much about the costs to family carers as individuals. And so I'm going to start off a little bit by, as I think as Yuki's presentation explained very clearly, we know that sort of dementia care has become a huge policy priority, and if we look at Europe as a whole, most countries have developed or are developing a dementia strategy. You know, there's that person who's doing these lovely drawings of the conference, isn't there? And yesterday, the drawing of the conference showed little pictures of research on dementia from sort of 1961, and it's this tiny little pile, and then there's sort of, you know, 2013, a huge pile, and I can't do that as well. Mm-hmm. But if we think about it, the first published research on caring for somebody with dementia was in 1966. That's agreed to be the first one. Now, if you were to sort of Google, you know, dementia carers, you come up with millions and millions of hits. So we know it's become a much more sort of widely researched area. And I think there's also, we've got some really clear messages from this research. There is absolutely no research from any country in the world that has ever not suggested that caring for somebody with dementia is stressful, and also that it seems to be more stressful than caring for people with other long-term conditions. I think as well, we know that there's, you know, because of carers are individuals, they're caring for other individuals, so the complexity and variety of their responses does mean there isn't a single silver bullet, and probably it's much more about providing multi-component interventions. And I want to sort of say, well, if we look at social care policy within this country, based upon the research that I'm going to talk about, we don't seem to have taken on board these messages from research. We've also had a reference that, you know, to, we know that there are individual interventions that help carers, like the SMART programme, the Coping with Caregiving programme for carers. But equally, we know there's problems with the timeliness of these interventions, things being offered when somebody's been caring for years and years and years, and they have, well, I call it the sort of washing up effect. You know when you're washing up after sort of people have been round for dinner, and somebody comes in, you've spent hours, you've washed all the pans, you've washed all the glasses, and somebody comes in 2 minutes from the end and says, oh, would you like a hand? You say, no, thank you. I mean, you know, and I think that's the washing up effect we really see in dementia. Somebody comes along, they've been caring for years, so nobody offers them any support until the last 5 minutes, and they say, oh, would you like a couple of hours a week of a home care worker? And then we also know about the huge problems about mainstreaming research interventions, these incredibly effective sort of pilots, but they never seem to reach it into standard research. So, why did we do this study? Well, we know that there's a lot about central and local government investment in support for carers within the UK. We know as well that there's been a huge increase in the number of carers workers, people called things like carers information officers, carers outreach worker, but this research has been sort of fairly under-evaluated. So what we did, and I should emphasise that it wasn't actually meant to be a study about dementia. It was a study looking at social care practice with carers, and we got lots of different sorts of data. We had quantitative data from surveys of local authorities and the National Minimum data set looking at the workforce looking for supporting carers. We collected lots and lots of documents and looked at lots of websites, and we did interviews with people who were involved in commissioning social care services from a social care perspective, people who sort of said, this is what we're going to do in our locality, family carers, we spoke to people, carers with a specific remit to support carers, and finally we spoke to sort of a range of voluntary organisations who were likely to be supporting carers, things like the Parkinson Society or the Stroke Association, as well as obviously the Alzheimer Society. And it didn't really come as any surprise that, because I think as the earlier presentations have made so clear, because dementia becomes such a big, complex policy challenge, actually over half of the interviews spoke about dementia. And this, you know, especially people from voluntary organisations, especially interviews with commissioners. And it's not just, I mean, we actually tried to have a huge range. You know, we were looking at parents who were caring for young adults. We were looking at, went to the MS Society. It wasn't meant to be a study of dementia, but as always happens when you're looking at social care, it nearly always ends up being a study of dementia. So quickly moving on to the findings. We know that there's much more emphasis upon trying to have effective commissioning services, trying to have health and social care working together. But in fact, we know that this may not work perfectly in practice. And that was something that came over very strongly from the interviews with commissioners. There were tensions between some of the things they said. So for example, on the one hand, this particular commissioner spoke about They'd invested some money within day centres so that there was this sort of extra day that if somebody was actually, it wasn't the normal day for the person with dementia to go to a day centre, but the carer felt really at the end of their tether, that the carer could actually phone up and say, actually, I really can't manage, and these day centres were deliberately having a little bit of spare capacity so that they could take on board this type of support. But that was just one example. That was really incredibly rare. What was much more common was to hear commissioners talking about, oh, the market will sort out everything. Everybody's got an individual budget. They'll be able to buy all these services. I don't know where you're supposed to buy them from. You're supposed to magic. I mean, Raphael spoke about the magic pharmaceutical bullet. You know, really, we could actually think about the magic sort of care worker bullet of care workers who know about dementia, who are reliable, who turn up on time, who get on well with a person with dementia. But there's this... There was this assumption among some of the commissioners that the market was going to sort out everything. There also became real tensions within the commissioning. So, for instance, one particular person that I interviewed, he absolutely, I mean, he spoke about this social enterprise, which was where the emphasis was upon providing positive experiences for the person with dementia, you know, like taking them to a football match or taking them to the cinema. Now, he spoke about this as if it was the magic service, nothing could be better. And then, of course, I went off and I spoke to the person who organised the service, and then I spoke to some of the other people who'd used the service, and then I spoke to another agency that had been kicked out of the way because this service had been given the contract, and they had very different views. They said, this is all very well. This is very good for people caring for somebody, you know, perhaps in the earlier stages of dementia. Our service is really concerned about the interests of spouses. They're caring for somebody with really severe dementia. They don't get a break, and really they can't leave the person alone. The person actually may not really want to go out. You know, this particular policy doesn't really take on board that full range of carers. There's also been a huge emphasis within particularly with government policy and local government, centrally and locally, about, oh, well, we just need to provide carers with information. How many times have we read this in reports? The carers said they wanted more information. Well, I don't think that's true. What they want is better information. They've got all the information. They can Google themselves and end up with a million hits. What they really want is somebody who will actually take the time to go through things with them and explain about the information. So this particular worker who worked with black and minority carers of people from black and minority ethnic groups who had dementia, she said, well, actually, I really need to go and see this person. I need to go through the leaflet with her. I need to make sure she understands it. So it's not just enough about information. It's sort of about providing other things as well. So this idea about having support groups for people to meet other carers, finding out about realising that you're not alone, doing things like, I mean, it's interesting because the research about the effectiveness of complementary therapy is always very terribly equivocal when somebody does a systematic review of the effectiveness of complementary therapy. But if you actually go and talk to people out there, there's an awful lot of money going into supporting things like having massages, reflexology, and if it isn't effective, it all seems rather strange, and yet people themselves say it is effective. So I always find it a little bit confusing to have, on the one hand, these systematic reviews that say there's no evidence of effectiveness, and on the other hand, there's all these people out there who are clearly using them, who are clearly using their personal budgets to, you know, go to have a spa day or have a massage or something. And then really, in the last couple of minutes, to try and, you know, bring this down to sort of individuals, I just want to give you an example of one of the funny things was that there were two daughters who were in the study. They came from two different study areas. They had very different backgrounds. They weren't very similar in many ways at first sight, but actually they were very similar. And I think some of these, their experiences sort of really encapsulate some of the challenges we face in sort of actually bringing forward what we know about caring into actually giving people really good packages of care. So this person here, Catherine, her mother lived in London, and in fact her mother got dementia, so she decided that she would ask her mother to move and live with her in another city. And then this is Clara. Well, this isn't Clara really, of course, it's Isabella Rossellini, but just let me tell you, if you ever thought that middle-aged women were invisible, just try Googling images middle-aged woman and you just get nothing. So I like Isabella Rossellini. Or you get women who look about 30. So I decided that Clara could grow up, obviously it's in her real name, she could have Isabella Rossellini, because Isabella Rossellini is very nice. And she also cared for her mother. She again had noticed this sort of picture that we're very familiar with, the sort of gradual deterioration, and she asked her mother to come and move in with them. Now, in terms of the support they receive, Raphael spoke about in his presentation about how the costs of dementia care to social care are very much invested in residential care. So if you look at people who are living in the community, they just get nothing. So there's Catherine's mother. She went to a day centre twice a week. Clara, her mother, went to a social club once a week. It wasn't a specialist club for people with dementia because she wasn't too difficult. And once a month they went to an Age UK reminiscence group together. Clara's mother had a short stay in a care home, and that was really successful. And Clara herself went to a carers group, and she'd gone on a self-esteem course, which the carers worker had referred her to. And she had become this sort of real carer advocate. And both of them had quite limited support from their siblings. Catherine herself, she sort of spoke about the need for practical support, so the incontinence pads that were provided for her mother by the council. She also hoped to have a break. She also went to a carers group, and she joined a walking group to try and meet people. But you know, they really had very little social support. So in particular, Catherine, who was widowed, she said, "I've really never had much of a social life." And this, most of her support came from this neighbour who would visit her occasionally, and they'd share a glass of wine together and talk. Clara actually had had this particular person called Kira, who was a trained counsellor, and she said, "She's been incredibly helpful to me. She's absolutely been a real rock." And I think that's something that we sometimes seem to find it hard to remember, that people use particularly social care services and healthcare services because of gaps in their social support. So by definition, these are not people who've got vast amounts of sort of support from within the family. They both had shared concerns. And I think we sometimes forget about the big things. They were women on limited incomes. They were worried about what would happen to their mothers in terms of long-term care, in particular in Clara's case, because her mother had sold her house to move in with her, but her siblings were expecting the inheritance. And so Clara couldn't say, and her mother couldn't say, "That's it, I'm moving into a nursing home, I've chosen to do this and I'm going to pay for myself," because there were all these other siblings who were expecting some of the sale of Clara's mother's house. And they were really worried about, you know, for themselves as women on limited incomes. Yes, they found it difficult to care, but equally they really benefited from the fact that they had their mother's pensions, they had carer's allowance, they had attendance allowance, and that was actually making a difference to their family income. And I think that's one of the conclusions I want to make, is that why in dementia research we seem to forget some of the wider structural issues. We know that in ageing, pre-existing inequalities are often accentuated, as well as the sort of new inequalities that happen because of dementia. We need to think more about the social context in which many carers are operating. In particular, you know, many women who are on very limited incomes, for whom life is a financial struggle. It's not just the issue of caring for somebody with dementia. We need to think about the wider social context, the fact that people need long-term support, this model that seems to be so beloved in many local authorities of you get an information leaflet and then you go away. It's really not going to support people with dementia. It cares for people with dementia because they will have other needs. One of the things that came over really sort of quite strikingly for me was, I've said there's so much research upon supporting carers of people with dementia, but actually if you look at the discourse of these practitioners, of the commissioners, of the carers workers, it was entirely absent. And yesterday, obviously, we've had the presentation from the Social Care Elf, which is hoping to sort of try and spread this. But, you know, there is this real mismatch between messages from research about dementia and how hard it is about getting them into practice. And then finally, one of the things sort of methodologically from a research thing is how hard is it to... One of the big difference between Catherine and Clara was really the emotional support that Catherine had received, and in particular the help she'd received from this carers worker called Kira, who got her onto this self-esteem course, who'd set her up with all this networking, and now Catherine was absolutely, you know, becoming quite a big force in local, you know, decision making, going to different meetings, talking about standing up in conferences, talking about her experiences. And the other one who really she'd been given support, yes, but it was, I don't know, it was really hard to explain, that it was sort of a bit begrudging. It was, well, there you are, take it or leave it. It wasn't that real personalised support. And I'm not very sure, either as a researcher or as a practitioner, how we can capture those things. And I'm hoping you should have the answers. And then just finally to say thank you. This was funded by the School for Social Care Research. And thanks to everybody for listening and everybody who helped us with the project. So thank you very much. Well, it's really interesting because they had different backgrounds. Some of them had come in from a sort of an advice route, people who'd worked for the Citizens Advice Bureau, some people who'd worked for Connections, some people had come in through personal experience of caring, other people, there were some little social workers who'd obviously decided that actually statutory social work wasn't for them, they wanted to work, you know, they'd taken a big pay cut. I mean, really, they would, you know, job security and pay would be much worse. And they were sort of, so they came from different backgrounds. I think one of the workers I spoke to had done a degree in marketing, and then she'd done some voluntary work when she was at university. So she thought, oh, right, you know, I'm going to use those skills. So they were very varied. But in some ways they had come, most of them had come from something that was quite a similar area in terms of, say, advice work or advocacy.
Rafi Wittenberg, for the carers who you interviewed, was the main thing that they wanted some advice and support, or were they also sort of interested in getting a carer's direct payment and having money that they could choose how to use?
I mean, some of them did use carer's direct payments. I think that wasn't the problem. It was the absence of other things. I think the difficulty would be, if you look at some of the... I think the Health and Social Care Information Service, who collect all the data in this country, in England anyway, I think they've suggested that the average payment is about £100-150 a week, isn't it? Now, if you were looking after somebody who had a lot of personal care needs, and you were perhaps spending £10 or £15 an hour on the support worker, you haven't got a lot of money left that you can use to take yourself off to various relaxation things. So you're very reliant upon free services provided by the voluntary sector and knowing whether they are. And of course, some of the voluntary sector are saying they've now had to introduce policies of charging the services. So, you know, I mean, not at the full economic cost, obviously, but still. So it wasn't that they weren't opposed to direct payments, although some of them were worried about it. It was the fact that it wasn't really in, you know, a direct payment in itself wouldn't meet all your needs.
More questions? Just one question.
Yeah.
I read some articles that in UK you experienced a lot of differences because of the socioeconomic status differences. Did you also observe some of these during the interview responses?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's difficult to tell because we didn't really look at that absolutely systematically. Mm-hmm. You mean for the carers themselves?
Right, yeah.
But yes, I mean, I think it's just because of the fact that we know, don't we, from Linda's, the research that Linda and Margaret have done, which shows that many carers give up work early or have got lower incomes or have to work part-time. On the whole, they're not dealing, you know, many people have not got huge financial circumstances. Although, interestingly, this is nothing to do with dementia. I interviewed a woman who cared for her daughter with Down syndrome, and her husband had a good job and the family had a good income, and she said whenever the social workers came along, they looked at the house and they didn't assess her daughter as a woman who didn't have a lot of money because she was unable to work and was reliant upon benefits. They didn't assess her daughter on her own, which is what they should have done, and looked at her daughter's income. They just assumed, they thought, oh yeah, you're all right, you know. Mm. So I think it's quite a complicated area, but, you know, we couldn't really draw those conclusions absolutely. I think somebody would need to look at it, you know, more systematically.
Well, thank you, everyone. And thanks to the